Welcome to another week of Free Basketball. I am your host, Ryan Meadows, and joined once again by one Daniel Greer, who is... Well, let me just ask you, are you nursing any wounds still from the Grizzlies-Warriors finality of that series?
No, none at all. Feel good. Feeling really positive. But yes, it does suck because I hate the Warriors fans just in general. And after seeing the team that they're going to play, it makes me even more sick. So that hurts the most, just knowing. But realistically, we weren't going to have Ja back, I don't believe. I don't know what's going on with that. So I'm not hurting because those guys, they're role players for a reason. So at some point, the onslaught of Clay going the way he did, you know, you tip your cap because they didn't play better than the Grizzlies the entire series. But that one game, they for sure outplayed the Grizzlies, especially down the stretch.
Yeah, that was like the tale of, what, game four and game six for the Grizzlies, winning the entire game without Ja, and then just fall apart with a couple minutes left. So,
yeah,
a good learning lesson for them, and it's hard for me because, you know, free basketball, we do Grizz 901. It's hard to be more objective because I do have some thoughts about the Warriors team. And I don't want it to come off as like a homerish, well, you're just a Grizzlies fan. Right. But maybe we'll talk about it a little bit because I want to be objective and fair. And I was objective and fair, I feel like, in the beginning, saying that I thought the Warriors were going to win in six regardless. So I feel like I'm extremely objective and I'm doing a good job. So I can give some honest thoughts without it seeming like I'm just trying to tear them down. But we are going to talk about the ending of the second round, all four matchups. We won't go super in-depth on each, and then we'll talk about the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. Maybe not give like a breakdown, but just some general thoughts and a prediction, of course, who we think are going to actually be in the finals. So let's kind of, let's do just a little tiny postmortem on the Warriors-Grizzlies. So the Grizzlies obviously were second in the West. Everyone gave them a compliment of being one of the deepest rosters in the NBA this year. The youth, they played hard. The physicality really showed up. But there is this overwhelming sentiment that is creeping into every NBA Twitter narrative of how they are better without Ja Morant. And there is a point to that a little bit, right? Their defense was better. They held the Warriors down in all three games, blew them out in game five at home, and held the Warriors to like 101 points in game four, and just towards the end it kind of fell apart and held them to 110 in game six in the closeout. The offense is more crisp, it looks like. The ball is moving more. The defense is better. What say you as a Grizzlies fan?
No, the team is not better overall without Ja Morant. If you actually look at those numbers, defensively, they are better. But offensively, they're nowhere close to being as better or, you know, anywhere close to being as good as they are with Ja on the floor. But if you also look at those numbers and you take out Tyus Jones, they're still good. So is it the guys just being able to just kind of play, you know, better defensively? Bigger bodies, you know, they're more athletic, they're longer because you don't have those smaller guards on the floor. Yes. So I get it. But if you don't have a small guy, a point guard, and you're able to play those longer guards, then you can actually have more length on the defensive end. It's just you can't score as much. But it doesn't take much for you to catch hot, just like they did in game five, and you look like you're amazing. But that doesn't always happen. In the three games without Ja, they shot not well at all, except for that one game in game five. So, yeah, I think you throw that out the window, and I think that you just work around in the future. Who do you put around Ja, and how can you work on Ja's game to let him understand, like, if I can work the offense similar to the way that Tyus Jones works it, then I can actually get more, you know, chances that should be freed up because he might be able to catch the ball and a quick dribble to the lane, and there's nobody there. Not the attention won't be on him as much going forward if he learns to play like that. But he has to learn to get the ball out of his hands and do less LeBron basketball and more Tyus Jones basketball.
Yeah, that's interesting because kind of a bad weekend slash series for traditional point guards and centers, right? Like, we've always talked about what if basketball was just a bunch of 6'8 to 6'9 scoring forwards and wings. Yeah. What would that NBA, the evolution of the NBA look like? And, I mean, we saw it in a bunch of series, really, is centers and point guards, traditional point guards anyways, are dying.
Yeah.
So I don't know if Ja kind of leans towards a more traditional point guard, but he is smaller. And but the thing is like when you get in the playoffs, you need that guy you can throw the basketball to and say, go get me a basket.
Right.
Just look at Luka Doncic, right? And Ja is that, here, go get me into the lane, but he's not that go get me a basket guy. So what is he really, you know? And that's what I think is a big question mark with him going forward. Is he going to actually devote time to the defensive end and getting better at that? Is he going to devote time to getting better at his jump shot and having some other moves besides straight line downhill drives? So that's, I think, is interesting for the Grizzlies and for the development, because I do agree with you that it's just dumb that people are saying they're better without Ja, because look at that in 4 and 6. If he's in there at the end, they don't just die and let those leads, don't give up those leads. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, on that Ja stuff, real quick, like, he shot much better from three in the entire Warrior series when he played. I think he went 4 of 11, and in one game, he went 5 of 12. So, he's shooting the ball much, you know, much better throughout those entire games. In that last game, he went 4 of 7 from three before he got hurt. In game three, but the athleticism of the Warriors kind of took him out. I'm sorry, the Timberwolves took him out a little bit in that first series, but he showed up more in that second series. But I heard this comment from someone, and I don't remember his name, so if, whoever it might be, if you're hearing it, would love to give him props, but I do not remember who it was. But he did say, and it was very clear, Ja Morant isn't going to be a worse shooter from this point on. Like, he's not going to regress as a shooter. At this point, he's only going to get better. So, if you see what you see in Ja, he's obviously taken, like, a leap or two leaps from his first year, his rookie season, when really all he was is get to the front of the rim. And he was just so good, so athletic that, you know, honestly, you couldn't stop him. But now, in this, I think it's his third year, you have to understand how to defend him, because he can shoot that wide open three now, you know, and he's not doing it at a terrible rate. And so I think he is going to continue to get better. And if he continues to work on his game, on his shot, then I think he knows that he's only going to be more unstoppable, because he's always going to be able to have that quick drive, especially getting into his prime for the next 10 years. So if he can work on that shot, he can be that scorer. He just has to figure out where his shots are. Is it at the elbow? Is it beyond three? And so where does that pull up, the floater? So all that will factor into his game, but he's not going to be a worse shooter than he is from right now.
That's a good point. That's enough about Ja and the Grizzlies. Obviously, they have an interesting summer on who they're going to re-sign. Are they going to consolidate? What are they going to do with those two draft picks? So it's a fun summer for them. They're a young team, and the trajectory is looking up. But let's get to the 76ers Heat, two teams that I don't know if you feel you can say the same about their trajectories going up for both teams. But the 76ers Heat, the Heat ended in six in Philadelphia in what was a dud game. And you know me, I said it last year when Danny Green got injured. 76ers are going down because Danny Green makes everything fit together. And I know it doesn't make sense. How can Danny Green be that important? But for the past couple of years, anytime Danny Green has gone down on any team, they've typically gotten worse. So I don't know what it is about Danny Green. He looks like he can barely walk anymore. And now he just got that very unlucky, unfortunate fall from Embiid on his leg and tore his ACL. But the biggest story, obviously, is James Harden doing absolutely nothing, completely no-showing in the second half, where I think he only took, like, what, two shots or something like that? And mm-hmm. He told reporters he ran the offense and the ball didn't come back to me. I don't know about what offense you thought they were running in game six, but I did not view any offense at all being run, and a lot of standing around on offense and defense, and it was a lot of Embiid bail us out. So maybe not just pile on James Harden, because I know it's fun to do, but what is it about the 76ers? Is it the roster construction that just has no chance at all, or is it just the individual players themselves are just not those guys?
I think it's the individual players. If you got to look at somebody like James Harden, who has not played up to expectations, he hasn't taken, you know, seriously how to develop his own game the right way. And I think it's how do you come back from being a guy who you're looking for fouls, and you're that's really where he became unstoppable, because he was parading to the foul line, and at that point, people didn't want to get up on him as much. Well, now they're able to get up on him, and that first quick step and that travel step back where he has four steps for a step back, such as Steph did in that that last game against the Grizzlies, that's not there anymore. Like, he does not have the quickness. So it's up to James Harden to figure out, am I going to be a player that's going to honestly be a top-tier player in the league going forward? I have to get my body right. I have to figure out how to develop my game, because right now he's not. So I think it really goes on him, because the surrounding cast of Tobias Harris and Maxey, and you can, I guess, add in, you know, Thybulle and Milton. I don't know if that's good enough around an Embiid, even though Embiid is amazing. I think you have to have the guy who's about to make, what, $47 million in James Harden. They got to figure that out. And as long as Daryl Morey's tied to James Harden, it's all going to come down to James Harden. And as we know, he's a regular season player, and that's all you can say about James Harden.
Ooh, yeah, the extreme fall-off that I feel that James Harden is about to have is going to be vicious. It's all of those long nights of tequila and strip clubs and velvet rooms. It's going to rear its ugly head, and I'm fearful that James Harden, I just don't see how the 76ers can potentially think about signing him to 4 or 5 years. It just would be to give a Pete Pranica phrase, it would be a hammer nail coffin to that franchise if they signed James Harden for 5 years. Now, I know everybody can be traded, but if you sign James Harden to 4 or 5 years, you know, $250 million, even in year three, who in the world is going to take that off your hands? So I just don't see how they can sign him to a long-term deal. I mean, Joel Embiid is already like, Houston, James is gone. He's more of a facilitator now. There's a lot going on with that franchise, and they're keeping Doc Rivers, which is great. So this is kind of turning into another team that is high comedy because they believe they have a chance, and you can kind of talk yourself into it. I mean, heck, I talked myself into beating the Heat in the series, and once again, they fall flat on their face. But we'll get to the Heat in a second, since they did advance. We'll talk about their matchup. Let's talk about Celtics-Bucks, which we know Celtics, Grant Williams is like, what, 7 for 18 from 3, just throwing and firing them up there. The Bucks just completely rolled over and played dead after the third quarter and got thumped. Is that something you would have expected from a repeating or a team trying to repeat as NBA champion, or do you think it's kind of predictable, all that stuff, all their warts kind of caught up to them without Chris Middleton to help cover and mask them up?
Yeah, I think it all kind of caught up to them. I think the Celtics quickly learned, if we just keep two people in the lane at some point, then Giannis has to pass the ball, or he has to take it right at him, even though the refs weren't calling any charges on him, and they think they made that decision very clear very early. They still withstood Giannis getting 25 points, 20 rebounds, and 9 assists. So Giannis played great, but the supporting cast around him, Drew Holiday, Brooke Lopez, they both played well in this last game, and Drew Holiday had been playing well. But the rest of the supporting cast and Grayson Allen, Wesley Matthews, even Bobby Portis, he played okay. But then, you know, Pat Connaughton, a lot of those guys kind of realize that they are role players for a reason. And so, yeah, they just kind of all died on the vine in that last game.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't I for picking the Celtics to win this series, I haven't loved them. And I know everybody after this is like, oh, this is our favorite to win the NBA championship now. They got by the Bucks. I'm not sure if I agree with that at all. I thought the Bucks were severely hindered and had a lot of problems on offense, at least, and were just didn't have many options that they could go to. And the Celtics barely got by them. Barely. I mean, they had to win the last two games, one on the road and one at home, just to advance. So I think this, we'll get to this in the next, talking about the Eastern Conference Finals, but I do not think this is a shoe-in that the Celtics are going to all of a sudden make the finals our favorites to win the NBA championship, because I just did not see that at all. And I could be completely missing that, but I am going to take a victory lap for saying in the episode a couple weeks ago that the Milwaukee Bucks cost themselves a repeat chance at the title because they dodged the Nets and the two seed. I said, I think it was a month or two ago or right before the playoffs, that the Bucks were not going to repeat now and lose to the Celtics because they willingly chose to give up home court so they could play the Bulls and avoid the Nets. Boy, what a huge misstep. Was that a huge misstep to you still, or do you think it didn't matter?
No, I think it has to matter if you go on and win 109-81. But I don't think it's as important because those teams had not been playing well at home. It was kind of weird. It was a road team victories down the stretch. But in the end of the day, the Celtics figured out how to win, and they won 109-81 on their home court. I think that game seven, going back home, it's hard to match the energy from the crowd and really an onslaught, an avalanche from three, or just kind of getting on your neck. You kind of feel it, and you can't get away from it if you're on the opponent. And the home court team is just going all over you. So it's hard to get away from it, and I think that's what happened. The avalanche just kept coming from the Celtics.
Yeah, the only reason I didn't parade it around more is because five of the seven games, I believe the away teams won.
Right.
But in the end, the home court did, in fact, matter. So justified in the end. But the thing about the Bucks is, I felt like they were trying really hard. Like, I thought they were trying to do whatever they could, and they just simply had no answer. And I know they shot 4 for 33 or whatever it is from three, 12%, which is one of the worst. But they did it the entire series. So it's not like, you know, oh, it was just a one-game blip. They had terrible shooting series from three. So I think they do have a lot of interesting questions. I mean, they're kind of in that point where they just drop role pieces and add role pieces, like drop PJ Tucker, add Wesley Matthews. You know, they're kind of in that phase. Drop George Hill, add him back. Get Grayson Allen to fill a spot. So they're kind of in that phase where they kind of have to do this every year now, since Giannis and Drew and Chris are going to be their core and kind of into their prime. So it'll be interesting to see if they try to do anything over the summer. But I don't know if we should wrap up that second round with this, but we're going to. Another massacre. The Dallas Mavericks and the Phoenix Suns. The Dallas Mavericks closing it out in seven into Phoenix against the number one team in the regular season in the NBA. Chris Paul, Devin Booker, complete no-showed. Devin Booker, I think, with a staggering 11 points. I believe Cam Johnson led the Phoenix Suns in scoring with 12. And the big story, of course, Luka had 27 at half, and so did the Phoenix Suns. And I know today and all last night, everybody, this is the thing about NBA Twitter. Everybody loves to prey on your fall. everybody wants you to lose, and they love to dance in your grave with memes and GIFs and all that kind of stuff. Did you enjoy the Suns losing? Because it felt like a lot of people enjoyed the fact that they talked so much trash throughout the regular season. Even players were calling them out on Twitter. I mean, Anthony Edwards had an Instagram Live video that he deleted. Patrick Beverley, why in the world are we still hearing from Patrick Beverley? Is on there talking about the fake injuries, and he's on the jump this morning on ESPN. Did you enjoy the fall of the Suns as well? Or do you think it was just a bad game and it just happens every once in a while?
I don't think it's a bad game that happens every once in a while, because they just got blown out 113-86 Thursday in game six. And that was in Dallas. And so that's what everybody thought, that the game was going to change. But honestly, if you look at this, like, you know, the person who disappeared was Chris Paul. And I think he's getting the most hate out of anybody. But he has not played well this series. And I think that Luka took advantage of him completely. And I think that once they figured out something there in Dallas, I think they just kind of kept going right at it and just dared that the Phoenix Suns stop them. And I don't think it ever happened. And obviously it didn't happen. So I don't know who I like or hate more. Like, I don't love Chris Paul, and I don't like his antics. I've respected him over his last probably five or so years once he got away from the Clippers. So I respect him more. But I don't know if I just don't like him. But I did not want them to win. But I also didn't want the Dallas Mavericks to win, because they are not a rival, the Grizzlies, but they're the up-and-coming team as well. So now they're getting all this love, and Dallas is taking off and looking great, and I'm just over here just looking at through the window, you know, just kind of, you know, hoping and wishing the Grizzlies could be there. But at the end of the day, I really do love Luka as a player, and so I'm glad they won. Plus, in the end of the day, I'll keep my Homer hat on. Maybe that keeps Dallas currently constructed, thinking that, hey, we found something. So maybe they'll stay as is, and you know, they'll soon realize next season, maybe we weren't as good. Maybe we just kind of got hot at the right time.
Wow. Okay. So that's going to be an interesting topic when we get to that actual matchup here in just a second with the Mavs Warriors. The biggest question, obviously, to me is what's going on with DeAndre Ayton. I mean, the post-game press conference when Monty Williams are asking why he only played 17 minutes and he said it's internal is, whoa, okay, what's going on here? And then they're asking Devin Booker about it, and he's worrying about his mentals and all this kind of stuff, getting him good, whatever happens with this contract happens. Huge red flags to me. So I don't know what's going on, but it's officially trade season with the Suns, it feels like. So it feels like there is an impending sign and trade for DeAndre Ayton. Would you be, from what you saw in game seven in this series, and even going back to last year in the playoff run, would you think it would be better for the Suns to sign and trade him or to sign and keep him?
Wow. You can always say trade, because who are you going to trade for? But the team definitely lacks size. They need a big guy of some sort. They have to have a pick and roll guy if they're going to surround him, you know, and still have CP3 on this team, making whatever he's making. What was it, $38 million? I do believe it is $28 million. Sorry, not as bad. $28 million. I do believe you had to have something. So I don't know what you're going to sign in place of him if you do a sign and trade. I don't know what that looks like. So I would say you have to keep him. I don't know, like, what's that number at? Like, is it at 25 to 30?
Woo! I have no idea. I have no idea what it gets on the market. I feel like there's some young team who would probably do 25 to 30, right? Because he's, what, 23? 24 at max? And so some of them would talk themselves into a 4 or 5 year contract just because of the finals run. By itself, right?
Right. Yeah. I think you have to have something there.
Yeah.
And I'm looking right now. So he got paid $12 million this past season, $12.5 million. He is currently 23, but he will be 24. So he's almost 24 years old. I think his birthday is coming up very, very soon. But that would mean he's going to be 24 entering, you know, next season. So he's definitely entering his prime for sure. And I think he's only going to get better. But did, you know, kind of looking at it before Chris Paul arrived, DeAndre Ayton wasn't really anybody who was kind of soft. And I feel like CP3 made him a little bit, you know, harder and tougher. If he goes away and goes to another team, if he goes to the, let's say, Detroit Pistons, is he as effective? I don't know if that's true. I think CP3 played a big role in how good he really was. So that's tough. I wouldn't touch him if it was me, especially at the 25 plus million. I wouldn't touch him.
That's interesting because I think I would actually try to keep him. And I know that's opposite of what everyone has been saying overnight, but I'm not a follow the crowd kind of guy. I don't feel like we're follow the crowd kind of people. And I know that ownership, Sarver, is cheap. Are they likely to sign him? No. But I said this at the beginning of the year. It was either during our team previews that we always do or just watching the Suns throughout the season. The biggest problem to me on that team is not Chris Paul, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton. It's everyone else besides Mikal Bridges. Their backups were JaVale McGee, Cam Payne, Landry Shamet, like Torrey Craig.
Yeah.
Jay Crowder is in their starting five. That was my big reservation about them the entire year and multiple times throughout our podcast. If you listen, you know. I thought they were a really good team, and I thought for sure they would at least make the finals. But my biggest reservation for them was players 5 through 12. And I think that's their weakest spot. And Booker, Ayton, and Chris Paul covered up a lot of those warts. And Mikal Bridges, who was awesome. But, you know, Mikal Bridges is a high-ranking role player. But he can disappear, right? Like, yeah. He just disappears on offense throughout the game. And he's always out there as an Iron Man, and major props to him. But he can, he can kind of float in and out. You just don't notice he's out there. But I think I would keep Ayton. Just because it's insurance against Chris Paul. Because even if Chris Paul is gone after a year or two, or maybe they even trade him after this year, since he's habitually injured late into the playoffs for them now, at least you have a core of Ayton and Booker, right? Instead of you trade away Ayton to have a, different kind of older, more veteran center. And then say Chris Paul's done in a year or two, well, then you're left with just Devin Booker again. And all of a sudden you're back to being the 2017-2018 version of the Suns that you were. And I don't think Devin Booker's going to actually stick through that one this time around, having the taste of playoff success. So I kind of feel like you have to retain Ayton at this point. If you do see something sexy out there after you sign him, then fine, so be it. But something sexy. Let's talk a little stupid trades that I have not fleshed out. Look at salaries. I know they don't make sense. But let's do a little center trade carousel right here.
Okay.
Let's say things go bad for the 76ers over the summer and Beach just kind of out. We know the Utah Jazz are pretty much done on Gobert, right? Gobert has said Donovan Mitchell or me. I don't know what planet the Utah Jazz are going to pick Rudy Gobert over Donovan Mitchell going for their franchise. But let's get a little weird before we talk about these conference finals. Could you see a possibility of a three-way trade where centers kind of pop around to different teams? So you could have Rudy Gobert in Phoenix. You could have Rudy Gobert in Philadelphia. You could have Embiid in Phoenix with Booker and Paul. DeAndre Ayton with Utah Jazz trying to reset with Donovan Mitchell or with the 76ers. Now, I know Ayton's not, it would have to be a sign and trade. I know Ayton's not going to make near that money, most likely. But could you talk yourself into something like that? Is that at least feasible?
No. No, no way. No way in this. No way in this world would I do that. Like, if you're the 76ers,
you're the Suns, you couldn't get Embiid. You wouldn't want Embiid. I want
Embiid, yes. But you're talking
about. But you wouldn't get him.
I don't think you get him. Like, what you have to get. Yeah. Like, what are you giving up to get Embiid? Like, and don't get me wrong, Embiid's making $31 million, right? So that would, with, you know, Chris Paul, who's going to be making roughly, what, 30? And then you're talking about Devin Booker, who's close to 30, if not right at it or above it. You're talking about $90 million between three players. I'm not saying I hate it. Like, I would love it. But what you're having to give up, you would be fine. I would give up anything to get that, but you can't give up Booker. So do you have to give up Bridges, who's going to be making 21 next year? I don't know what you're doing, but you'd have to do a sign and trade with Ayton as well. So I don't know how you do that, and I don't know why I would want Ayton over Embiid, except for maybe he's younger, so that helps. But I don't know. I don't think that's possible. But I like the idea.
What about an Ayton Gobert swap? Do you think that's of interest at all?
I don't know if Gobert and Chris Paul could get along. I think they're I think they're both guys who are very good regular season players, and I think they'd be amazing in the regular season. But you want to talk about two guys who got taken advantage of in the playoffs, and that's Gobert and Chris Paul. So
I don't know
how that works. And I think they are easily a first round or second round exit, no matter what.
Yeah. It kind of feels like Ayton and Chris Paul should be a package deal. But then you're talking about like $50 million worth of salary potentially that you're trying to have to match. And it's just not feasible unless you're going to sign James Harden, you know, and put James Harden in Phoenix. I just don't see that happening. But that's just a complete tangent. You know, it's not happening. But I was thinking about it last night of what if we could have this weird offseason where we kind of have a center swap, you know, kind of like wife swap, except at the end you don't. Your wife doesn't come back to your home. The team just keeps her. So what if we had that kind of scenario, if trading centers, you know? But let's get into these conference finals. Let's talk about the Eastern Conference Finals first. The Miami Heat versus the Boston Celtics. I know everybody is picking the Celtics. I have personally played the Heat to win game one. And I know you said you were opposite at first. Have you stuck with that the Celtics are going to win this game one and win the series easily? Or do you think that the Heat can actually put up a fight in this series?
No, I think the Heat can put up a fight. That's without a doubt. They are so tough at home that I believe that they easily can put up a fight. And they can, you know, the Heat could easily win this series. Like, I'm not saying that I love the Celtics so much that they are going to run away with this series. But I do believe that I'm going to go with the talent other than the top talent, which is Jason Tatum and Jimmy Butler. Okay, outside of that, I think the Celtics are far and away a much better team. And if you look at the fact that you have the Celtics and Al Horford, who plays very good defensive, you know, on any other big, I think that he's found his playoff, you know, legs, and I think that he's going to be a force against a guy like Bam Adebayo, who people consider one of the better bigs in the league. I think Al Horford can kind of stifle him. I think he can kind of keep even with him, honestly, numbers and, you know, effect on the game. And so then you have the two best players with Miami. They're kind of even with Tatum and Horford. The rest of the crew, Max Strus, Vincent, Hero, like none of those guys, Duncan Rock, add anybody you want. Nobody scares me from that Heat. I think they are a very good team, but I just think that I would rather take Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, anybody else, give me, whoever. And I think I'm a better team overall, role players, than it is with the Heat.
Yeah, I think you make a great point. I agree that the Celtics are the much better team overall. There's something about having a long, tough physical series like that, even if it was against an inferior Bucks team without Middleton. to say that the Heat could jump on them early, right? And put them in a 2-0 hole, which is expected, right? The home team's supposed to win the first two games and then go back to Boston. Boston is supposed to be even after four. That's the whole point of doing it 2-2-1-1-1, is to be even and get us into a 7-game series, right? But what I'm worried about with the Celtics is their guard play at the point of attack. They have no one who can handle the ball consistently against pressure. Now, I know the Heat aren't going to have anybody like on this planet like Drew Holiday, but they have more guys who can get up into you and pressure you than what the Bucks had. And I'm worried about the Celtics. Turnovers weren't a huge issue for them because the Bucks weren't really pressuring them that whole lot. They were just sitting back and letting them shoot threes. The Heat are going to be up into the Celtics. So what I'm worried about is the fatigue factor, especially for older players like Al Horford, Marcus Smart, who seems to be a walking, you know, WebMD search bar. And I'm worried about the pressure that the Heat are going to put on the Celtics. I don't think this is going to be a pretty series. I'm not sure if I'm going to pick the Heat to win this series, but I think it could go 7 games for sure. But I think the Heat are going to win game one, and I'm interested to see who besides playoff Jimmy is going to show up for the 76ers. Bam had a horrible series against, well, he had a horrible series when Embiid came back, I should say. Before Embiid came back, he was feasting on poor Paul Reed. But is he going to have a bounce back series? Is Robert Williams going to be out for the 76 or the Celtics? Is Embiid going to just kind of run circles around Al Horford? Jaylen Brown, I mean, these guys are here in the Eastern Conference Finals again, a couple years older. They're going to fall apart again. Marcus Smart going to stay healthy. I mean, are we getting Pritchard coming off the bench shooting fire from three, saying to the bench that he's built like that or whatever, or that's what he does? Give me a break. I think it's an interesting matchup. I actually think it's closer than people want to either admit or realize. And I think this could be another 6 or 7 game dogfight for sure. Wow. A back-to-back super physical. And it's just the defense of the Heat. But the biggest wild card factor to me is Kyle Lowry. What's he going to be like? Is he going to be, you know, what's the word I'm looking for?
A non-factor? Because that's what he's going to be.
No. Is he going to be the old person's home Kyle Lowry who's in a wheelchair? Or is he going to reach back and find the guy that he was a couple years ago in that finals run with the Raptors? So that's the biggest X factor to me. Is there an X factor that you see for this series? Or do you think it's just a pretty straightforward series and I'm overthinking it?
I think it comes down to the role players, because if you look at, you know, these teams, Grant Williams, PJ Tucker, I think they match up well. And I think that they are pretty much a very similar player. They do pretty much the exact same thing. They try to get the loose balls, the rebounds. They try to help out defensively, and they shoot the corner three. So with that being said, I think you have the chance of, you know, somebody like a Vincent Struess, even, you know, Tyler Hero, or anybody else that might be on the Heat team, if they can step up and, you know, hit points and score when they normally don't in different games. I think that's what it comes down to, because I think everybody else is going to play fairly good and they're going to be fairly even. It's just what team has somebody that's off the bench, like, you know, Oladipo or Duncan Robinson, do they get hot and they kind of win a game for them, maybe when they shouldn't have won the game? And on the other side, is it, you know, somebody like Grant Williams who does get hot, Pritchard, you know, does Robert Williams come back? Does he have a big game? And so I think there's so much here, but I think in the end of the day, I really do believe that home court could be a big advantage, because usually role players play better when you're at home. But realistically, I think it comes down to, you know, the bench. And I don't know if I love the bench on either side, but, you know, I think somebody's going to step up. And I think you have a vet, you know, or somewhat of a vet like Oladipo and Derek White, who are both on the bench, they could have one good game in this series, and that could win the game because it teeters the balance on in favor of their team. So I really do think it's role players. They won't have a good game majority of the time, but that one game could win them the game because they go for 15 or 18 points.
Yeah, we saw a perfect example is Max Strus in game 6 against Philadelphia. What would your prediction be for this series? Who do you got and how many games?
I think it's Boston in 6.
Okay. I'm going to parrot that a little bit, but add a game. I'm going to say Boston in 7, okay. Which I know means they're winning on the road, which usually doesn't happen if you get to a game 7, but this playoff has been weird. I'm just begging for a playoff game that's within 10 points. Dear God. everything has been a blowout. This has not been a fun playoffs to me, even though the Mavs upset over the Suns is a massive upset. This has not been an entertaining round. I think it sucked compared to round one. Every game has been a blowout. The only games that have been somewhat close have been Grizzlies, Warriors, and a Bucks-Celtics one. Besides that, it's just complete blowouts, and I've hated it. But I say Celtics in 7. I think it's going to be pretty close. Let's switch to the Western Conference. The Mavericks-Warriors, do you give the Dallas Mavericks a snowball's chance throw in hell to knock off the Warriors to make the NBA Finals?
Yeah, I do, actually. I would pick them, and I'll give my prediction early. I'll pick the Mavericks to win this series.
Really? Yep. Okay, what is it about the Mavericks that you feel so good against the Warriors?
They have the best player on the court, and I'm going to ride with the best player on the court because I don't think the defense of Golden State is very good. I think they have 6, maybe 7 players that are good on this team. And I think that you saw players like Otto Porter and Kevon Looney who played well, you know, for their teams at certain points throughout this series. I think that was just matchup based. And so I don't think that they're going to repeat that. I give the edge to the Mavericks.
Wow. I see the mistake I made with March Madness that I'm not going to make here is with Kansas, you had to consider the path, right? And I just didn't like Kansas, so I didn't pick them to win, but I should have considered the path. And this is how I feel about the Warriors. I'm not going to ignore it twice. You have to consider the path that the Warriors took. They had the easiest run to the Western Conference Finals playing a Nuggets team without anyone that was any good besides Jokic. Then they get the Grizzlies where Dillon Brooks is suspended for Game 3, the only blowout of the series, and Ja goes out after Game 3. So, I get it. They squeaked by the Grizzlies without Ja, and they had Dillon Brooks back, which that's a whole nother conversation. But I cannot ignore that road. And I get it. The Warriors have looked bad. They've looked up and down. But I have to kind of lean back on my power rankings for this because shooting-wise, defensively, these are just metrics you cannot ignore. And I know the Mavericks were really good in the second half of the season when they got everyone back after the Porzingis trade, which is a big swing for them. But who do I trust more in a 7-game series? Spencer Dinwiddie or Andrew Wiggins? These are like my battles. I have to pick between these two guys, and that's a no-win situation. Am I really going to think Spencer Dinwiddie is going to go off for 30 points again against the Warriors? Probably not. I think it is a small ball matchup, and it's basically a three-point shooting contest. This could be another super high-variant series where there is no game within 3 to 5 points. Every game is 15-plus margin of victory. And I think I like the Warriors shooting better than the Mavericks, even though the Mavericks have been on fire, right? And Jalen Brunson has been awesome going isolation, but I think it's hard to knock off Steph Curry and Draymond and Klay, who has not been good, by the way, with a younger core with Poole, and Looney had a monster game in game 6, but do you think it actually is, what I'm torn, I guess is what I should say, is the actual matchups of it. Steph against Luka, Reggie Bullock against Clay, Draymond against Dwight Powell or Maxi Kleber. Like, the matchups are what I'm having a hard time with a prediction, because I think you could talk me into both sides. I like the matchups more for the Warriors side. I like the matchup more for the Dallas Mavericks. But is this a purely matchup-based thing, or do you think it's all about the bench in these matchups? Because the Mavs have been willing to do more with their bench. The Warriors kind of don't really have very many options. What is it about it to you? You just feel more confident because Luka is the best player?
Yeah, I do, because of Luka, but mainly I think Luka treats Steph the same way he treats Chris Paul. I think you go ahead and you're going to have probably Wiggins on matching up right away with somebody like Luka, and then you just ball screen and get Steph onto Luka, and I think you just kind of go right at Steph. And at that point, Luka can do whatever he wants against Steph Curry. He just can. Like, I don't know if there's a world that Steph Curry, who everybody says is an underrated defensive player, I just think that he gets taken advantage of. And you put on so much pressure onto him, and they want to go one-on-one. So at what point do the Warriors make the change where they double-team? So they have to do the same sense of what they did, the Timberwolves did to the Grizzlies, and they almost have to bring up Draymond and double-team when Steph is on Luka. I think that's what has to happen in the end of the day. So, but if not, you're going to see Steph Curry get taken advantage of, and I think that they have a chance to guard Steph with anybody on their team, because all he wants to do is run around and shoot three-pointers. And I think if he's hot, he's going to be hot no matter who's guarding him. And I think that anybody on that team, including Andrew Wiggins or Klay Thompson, who everybody thinks are great defenders, I think they'll get it too from Luka. So I think Luka's going to be hard to stop in this series because they don't have the defenders.
Yeah, Luka's just hard to stop for anybody because he's, you know, I've been saying for a long time he's top five player in the NBA, and he's probably not five, right?
Yeah.
If we're being honest, it's always been about his dedication, his body. Does he care? Well, he cares, and we see what happens with the Mavericks when he cares and what he does to teams.
Right.
So just ask the Suns last night. Probably a sore spot still. Maybe you shouldn't go up to Chris Paul and ask him what they think about Luka today. probably not a good start to your week. Not advised. But the thing about this to me is the Warriors are young, athletic, physical. Is that how you would describe the Dallas Mavericks? Because I would not.
No,
I would not describe them as physical, athletic. Luka is a kind of... plotting is a bad... I'm saying plotting with all the best respect and the nicest way I can as a compliment. It's kind of a plotting star, like, with his offense, and it's amazing. He's not reliant on just foot speed, a la James Harden. I think that's what makes him different than Harden. At least, you know, in this kind of phase of their careers anyways. But I would not... I think the defense of the Grizzlies and the athleticism and the length really bothered the Warriors. Now, the Warriors turn the ball over a lot anyways. It's just what they do, playing that free-flowing offense. But I would not say that about the Mavs. And I think that the Warriors are going to get more looks and better looks than they did against the Grizzlies, which is why I think I'm leaning towards the Warriors. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but I think in a jump shooting contest, which I think most of the series is going to be, I've got to lean to the Warriors. So I'm actually Warriors in six. And I just think it's a little too early for the Mavs, but I'm not counting out the Luka year four. We see this from guys who are all-time players. We see this from players who just all of a sudden they show up and make the finals for no reason. So I'm not counting that out, but I'm going to say Warriors in six. So do you have an X factor besides Luka that you think could flip this series?
Yeah, I think that somebody like Jalen Brunson could be a guy who flips the series. I think a guy on the other side, Jonathan Kuminga, because he is athletic and because they don't have many bigs, I think you could easily see somebody like Jonathan Kuminga take advantage of his athleticism and going up and getting rebounds, putbacks, and taking advantage of a lot of people So I think you're going to see Kuminga be an X factor in the series. And I think he plays much more than anybody has ever expected, especially in that last series. He didn't play much in the Grizzlies and got taken advantage of.
So your official NBA Finals is the Celtics versus the Dallas Mavericks. Yes?
Yes. And give me the Dallas Mavericks in six.
What? Okay, we're jumping the gun on the finals, but you're saying, wait, Mavericks to win the championship in six?
No. Mavericks versus the Warriors. I didn't give my games. Okay. I'm going to give out six.
Okay. So you've got a Warriors-Celtics finals. You've got a Mavericks-Celtics finals. I've got Warriors-Celtics finals. I think the Warriors actually win in six, so this will be a good series to kind of gamble against each other on this. But these start Tuesday. That's my daughter, Autumn. She's trying to get a feature. But let's wrap this up. That's enough. I didn't want to go too long, but here we are, almost an hour in already. What do you have to plug going forward? Anything we should be on the lookout for?
I don't have anything right now. If you are a Grizzlies fan and you are following Grizz 901, just continue to keep on keeping on. We've talked about our off-season schedule, and we're going to keep rolling with the off-season schedule. And I want to say that with the help of our team at Grizz Lead and with the help of my lovely wife, she gave me a lot of advice yesterday on what we should do and the direction we should go for the off-season. And so appreciate everybody kind of helping
Fire
out with that.
Ryan.
Get rid of Ryan right away. But besides that, bet the lead. We're going to keep on going. If you're a basketball fan, I'm sorry, not a basketball fan. Obviously you are. If you're a Major League Baseball fan, come over and join our Discord. We had a lot of info coming out with baseball, and so it'll be a lot of fun. But go ahead and check us out at Bet the Lead.
Yeah. Follow us on the Lead Podcast Network. A lot of good things happening, seeing some growth little by little. So thank you, everyone, who tunes into these. We appreciate it. Like, share, rate, review. Tell your friends, like Cody would say, RIP, in his honor. He'll be back. Don't worry. Eventually. But, for me and Daniel, hope everyone enjoys the conference finals. Let's make a little money. Follow Bet the Lead. We'll see you guys in a week.